Here, cause number 1319-00297-CV. Texas Central Railroad and Infrastructure, Inc. and Integrated Texas Logistics, Inc. versus James Frederick Miles.
May it please the court, Marie Yates for Appellants Texas Central. Your Honors, in this declaratory judgment action, our opponents convinced the trial court to hold, erroneously to hold, that Texas Central does not have authority to survey and condemn property needed to build the high-speed train between Dallas and Houston. Now, it is undisputed here that a railroad company, under the Transportation Code, a railroad company has such condemnation and survey authority, but our opponents say that Texas Central is not a railroad company because we do not yet have trains on track. Now, our opponents are misconstruing the plain language of the relevant provisions of the Transportation Code that define a railroad company and give a railroad company survey and condemnation authority, so this appeal is a matter of statutory interpretation. Let's start with the plain language of Section 112.053, which is up on my board here, and I'm in tab 2 of my poster booklet, which I understand Your Honors have.
Yes, we do.
Thank you, Your Honors. This section gives a railroad company the right to acquire property by condemnation for a number of purposes, including for the right-of-way or for new or additional right-of-way. Now, principles of statutory interpretation tell the court to give meaning to each one of those words, and that tells you that the right-of-way must mean something different from a new or additional right-of-way. And that tells you that the right-of-way is the very first track. So you can condemn as a railroad company to build the very first track or to build new or additional track. And that's why our opponents, one of the reasons our opponents are incorrect when they say that under the Transportation Code, a railroad company cannot condemn to build the very first track. Because they say to be a railroad company, you have to already have trains on track. The same point is demonstrated by the plain language of Section 81.002, and we're only going to put up a couple of boards. I don't want to scare you. I'm at tab 3 of my booklet. Now, this is the provision in the Transportation Code that defines a railroad company. And look at subpart 1. A railroad company includes a railroad incorporated before September 1, 2007. Now, what do we know? Trains on track cannot incorporate. So the word railroad cannot mean, in this provision, the word railroad cannot mean trains on track, right? So look at subsection 2.
I'm going to interrupt you real quick.
Sure, yes, sir.
I understand I have to push this button before I ask a question. It doesn't seem to be working very well. I think we get that, the packet that you sent to us. What I'm really interested in is when do you think you become a railroad? Because what I'm getting is, you become a railroad the minute you incorporate under the Business and Commerce Code. And I want you to tell me whether that's true or not, or whether you need to take additional steps before you become a railroad.
It's not true for a railroad company, because a railroad company is defined, look at subpart 2, that's the subpart that applies to us, a legal entity operating a railroad. And of course, as Your Honors pointed out, I mean, the point I was making is that means a legal entity operating a railroad business enterprise, right? Because if you read 1 and 2 together, the word railroad's got to mean the same thing, and only a railroad enterprise could incorporate. So I'm a legal entity operating a railroad enterprise. So just incorporating as a railroad doesn't meet this definition. I have to be operating a railroad enterprise. But on these facts, Your Honor, and that's tab 7 of my booklet where we list everything that Texas Central and what Texas Central has prevailed on the federal government agencies to do, what the state of Texas has done. On these facts, it should be undisputed as a matter of law that we are operating a railroad business enterprise. And once you get the statutory interpretation analysis, which was the point of my booklet, and I'm so glad Your Honor's had a chance to look at it, once you understand that they can't be right, that operating a railroad enterprise means I have to already have trains on track, once you get that, then you look at what are we doing and what have we done.
Well, but according, interrupting you again, according to the briefs or the facts that have been set out, I mean, you're about at 1% of the project. So, you know, this is an ambitious kind of project, and, you know, at what point, you know, it may or may not come to fruition, as many projects mm-hmm. don't. So at what point, basically, are eminent rights triggered?
Right. Thank you, Judge Hinojosa, for that question. What they're referring to is 1% of the financing, and this is their argument that we won't get the train built, right? Okay. The property code, in the property code, the legislature has already struck the balance on that between the rights of the property owner and the public's need for the public project, because property code section 21.101, it's cited in our brief, explains that if we don't get the financing, we don't get the project built, the property owners get their land back.
So it reverts back.
It reverts back. And so the landowners don't get to come in and stop us from doing the project by saying, you don't have the financing yet. You don't have trains on track, because that's the very purpose of condemnation. Literally, Your Honor, in addition to their argument creating a monopoly for companies that already have trains on track, which cannot be the case under the Texas Constitution, it also turns condemnation law on its head. Because think about it, all manner of pipeline companies, utility companies, railroad companies, look at the statutory language for their condemnation authority. They all say operating a pipeline, operating a railroad company, operating a utility.
So it's present tense and future tense.
Well, we think that's correct, too. We think that's correct, too. But at least on the record that we created here, Your Honor, because, you know, they keep citing the Denbury case. You know, I argued the Denbury case in the Supreme Court, okay? I'm very familiar with that case.
How do you distinguish it?
Well, for one thing, the issue in Denbury isn't the issue here. The issue in Denbury was the property owner was arguing, yeah, we don't think that pipeline's really going to be used by the public. That was the issue in Denbury. There's no such issue like that here, Your Honors, because it's undisputed that this train built between Dallas and Houston is going to fulfill a very important public transportation function to move the public between Dallas and Houston. So there's no public use issue here like there was in Denbury, clearly distinguishable. But what is similar is that when they challenged our public purpose in Denbury, we were then permitted to come in and put on the proof of a public use, and the Supreme Court set a very low bar for the public use. The test in Denbury 2, the second opinion, was, is it reasonably likely that sometime after construction, one member of the public will use it? Now, why would you set such a low bar like that? Because you don't want to get in the way of public infrastructure projects. And here you have a situation where when they challenged us, we came in just like we were supposed to, and we said, wait a minute, we're operating a railroad business enterprise. Look at what we're doing. We've surveyed over 2,000 tracks. We've got permits from 4,000 landowners. We got 200 employees and contractors and 100 experts. And
so I'm going to ask that question again, because I asked about being incorporated. But you also said, and operating.
And operating.
So what then constitues the birth of operating a railroad company? What is the lowest bar that you could set for operating a railroad company?
Your Honor, you have to be operating the enterprise, and we're certainly operating a railroad business enterprise. And I would suggest to Judge Tirina, that on this record, you wouldn't have to write a test. This isn't the case to write the test because of everything that's been done already here.
But I'm still interested in the test.
No, I hear you.
I'm interested to know, to see whether or not you've met it and or exceeded it, and how the general public knows when a railroad is a railroad.
Right. Well, is it for real? All right, this is their sham argument. Are we for real as a railroad business enterprise? And that's where all of our evidence that comes in. Look at everything the federal government has done. We have the draft environmental impact statement, 5,000 pages, considered 4 or 5 different routes. You know, it was involved the federal agencies, the EPA, the Federal Railroad Administration, et cetera, et cetera. And we've now prevailed on the Federal Railroad Administration. They're writing the operating rules for this train right now. They've agreed to write operating rules. Right? And the state of Texas is participating. You know, the TxDOT, the Texas Department of Transportation, was the co-lead agency for the state, helping the federal government with the environmental impacts.
So then the answer is that there's not a way, but there's many ways.
There are many. I agree with you, Your Honor. There could be many ways.
That's what you're saying.
But I'm suggesting on this record, it should be as a matter of law. Just as in Denbury, the evidence that we had before the court was plenty to satisfy the low threshold test for a public use. And here, all we got to do is be operating a real railroad business enterprise. They don't have a valid sham argument. We've spent $125 million, and we're buying rolling stock for the train, and we're spending money every day. You look at everything that Texas Central has done. We've made the contract with Amtrak to connect this train to the interstate rail system. So if you look at everything that Texas Central has done and is doing, and everything the federal government is doing, everything the state government is doing, this is for real. This is a train that will be built, but the test ought to be, are we a legitimate business enterprise? And the answer to that is yes.
And let me change topics just a
yes,
little bit, because you purport to be a railroad and an interurban railway.
I'm a railroad company and an interurban electric railway. That's a sect.
Each one of them has eminent domain authority.
Yes, sir.
You're seeking to build a track 200 miles long?
Yes, sir.
More or less. When exercising your eminent domain authority, do you have to pick one or the other through the whole project?
No, Your Honor, you're entitled to exercise eminent domain if you satisfy the test for either one of those, and we believe that we satisfy the test for both. Now, you asked me, when do you become a railroad company? You could put the same question to me about when do you become an interurban electric railway company. And if you put that question to me, I would have different statutory language. That's at tab 10 of my booklet. And that statutory language would tell you when you are chartered to conduct and operate and build an interurban railway between municipalities. And we are. And so we do meet that definition. They come in and say, oh, no, you're a sham, you'll never get it built. I say the property code deals with that and the question of financing and whether I'll ever get it built. I say I'm not a sham. Go look at all the evidence I've produced that we're for real. And so if I meet that statutory definition and I'm not a sham, I should be able to condemn and survey under either provision.
You stated earlier that if it was not built for some reason, that then it's an easement that the railroad acquires, it will revert back to the landowner, is that correct?
The landowner is entitled to get his land back. That's 21.101 of the property code.
And it still would be entitled to the compensation they've received. That wouldn't be, they would have to give back their compensation.
That's a question, Your Honor. It's dealt with in that provision of the property code. I'm not sure of the answer to that. I think they may have to, reimburse the compensation. I don't think they're entitled to keep the money and get their land back. So we've dealt with, I think, Your Honors, understand my statutory interpretation argument. So I won't walk through all the provisions in the transportation code that tell you that, including, you remember, section 199.002 that defines a railroad to mean an enterprise and distinguishes between the enterprise on the one hand and fixed track on the other hand. So it's clear that when I'm defined as a railroad company, it's because I'm a legal entity operating a railroad business enterprise. That's what I am. And I'm a legitimate railroad business enterprise. And we've gone over how you know that I'm operating a railroad business enterprise. That's everything that Texas Central has done, including, we retain the Japanese company as our consultants. They're the ones that built the very successful high-speed train in Japan. We're trying to build the same kind of train here. We talked about the federal government. Now, our opponents say that we have to have trains on track, and we argue in our brief that if Your Honor accepted their interpretation, that you would create a monopoly for companies that already have trains on track. They say in their brief that if you have trains on track anywhere, any state, any country, then you qualify and you can come build a railroad in Texas. But if you're a Texas company that doesn't have trains on track, you can't. And that's just not what the statute says. And it would create an unconstitutional monopoly for companies that already have trains on track. So that cannot be a proper interpretation of the railroad, of the transportation code. And the public policy considerations here are enormous, Your Honor. The official summary for that draft environmental impact statement for this high-speed train is attached to my brief of appellant. Okay? Take a read. It's very interesting. Page 22 talks about the economic impact on Texas of just this particular public infrastructure project, just this particular train, and the jobs it would create in Grimes County and other counties, and the multiple billions with a B of dollars of economic value for Texas. And this is just one condemnor. If they're right And every condemnor that gets its condemnation authority by operating has to, you know, meet some test. I'm not even sure what test they want. Then you're going to deny and delay and, you know, really cause a lessening of the number of public infrastructure Texas projects we can have in Texas. So that is huge. Now, I need to cover, because on statutory interpretation, I believe my opponent is going to say strict construction in his... Okay, I'll cover it in rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Well, good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Dylan Drummond, and I'm proud to represent Mr. Miles in this dispute. I'd like to thank he and his wife for making the trip here today from their ranch out in Leon County. I thought I'd begin with Mr. Miles' own words, which he gave under oath, which are frankly more eloquent than anything I've submitted to the court on his behalf. Quote, if TCRI constructs its project, it will split my property in two. I go to bed every night worried about what's going to happen to my property and how it will affect my family. I know that the project will impact my family's way of life on my property, but I do not want to relocate, nor should I be forced to. I'm worried that if something happens to me, my wife will be left to deal with TCRI and its project. That's really what's at stake here. Mr. Miles' sentiments are shared by every Texan who owns any square inch of Texas. Texas Supreme Court also agrees with him. None other than the late, great Chief Justice Jack Pope said, 2 years after I was born in Eggmire, the protection of one's right to own property is one of the most important purposes of government. That right has been described as fundamental, natural, inherent, and inalienable. Nearly four decades later, in Carlson, then Justice Brown held that, quote, the right to acquire and maintain private property is among the most cherished liberties. Finally, in 2012, former Justice Wainwright confirmed that a realty owner's right to exclude all others from their property, including for a survey as TCRI and ITL nominally seek to do here, is, quote, one of the most essential sticks in the bundle of rights that are commonly characterized as property. As a result, the court should affirm the summary judgment below that neither TCRI nor ITL are railroads or interurbans. Just one quick note, I'm going to say railroad and interurban. That's just shorthand for railroad company and an interurban electric railway company. That's a bit of a mouthful in 20 minutes. Let me begin with a threshold issue. As a matter of law, TCRI and ITL seek to operate high-speed rail in Texas, not railroads and not interurbans. That's why it's been so difficult for them to try to shoehorn the railroad and interurban statutes to fit these facts. It's just simply a category error to try to govern high-speed rail with railroad and interurban laws. The jurisprudential gymnastics the court would have to undertake to contort the railroad and interurban statutes to govern here is clear even from the Candyland Board of Colors and Arrows splashed all over their slides today. First, even if you go back to TCRI's original incorporation filing in December of 2012, as one of TCRI's vice presidents confirmed in the record, TCRI was originally formed to construct and operate, quote, a high-speed passenger railway, not a railroad. Indeed, the word railroad doesn't even appear in the purpose heading of that original incorporation filing. Second, it's undisputed that the trains that TCRI and ITL seek to operate here will travel up to 205 miles an hour. That comes from a verified statement of the CEO of TCRI's parent company, an affidavit of one of TCRI's vice presidents.
I hate to interrupt you, but
yes.
When I was reading this, what does the speed have to do with any of the statutes we're looking at today?
Well, thank you for your question, Your Honor. As a matter of law, high-speed rail is presently defined in statute as anything that moves faster than 110 miles an hour. So under current law, their trains are high-speed rail, as it's defined in statute. That's one thing to keep in mind here. There's been a lot of paper that's been filed. You have my apologies. But it's taken a lot of paper to try to simplify the morass of filings, as we can even see from today. The reason for all that consternation and agita is because it is a category error. These are high-speed rail trains that they're trying to shoehorn into being governed by statutes that govern railroads, that govern interurbans.
And how do you become a high-speed rail system in Texas?
Well, the statute defines it solely by speed. So anything that is passenger rail service that's reasonably expected to reach speeds of at least 110 miles an hour, that's at 112.201 of the Transportation Code and 199.03. As long as you're traveling greater than 110 miles an hour, which no railroad travels and certainly no interurban early 19th century travels at.
Does it create a separate authority for the creation of high-speed rail? Is there a distinction between 100 and 100 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, 180, as far as creation of an entity to provide those types of services?
The legislature certainly thought so. First, at the end of the 80s, when the last time that this issue was publicly debated, the legislature and the governor created an entire state agency to oversee the development of private high-speed rail in Texas. It failed miserably. That's why the act was withdrawn. But the legislature sees it as a fundamentally different thing. That is why to this day, high-speed rail is defined differently in Title V of the Transportation Code from railroads or interurbans. As soon as you hit that speed threshold, that makes you a fundamentally different entity, both physically, of course, but also legally.
So are you saying...
Please.
No, are you saying that under the construction of law, railroad law, I guess you could say, that right now it would be totally illegal, impossible to build a high-speed railroad in Texas? No company could ever do that, whether it's an existing one, even under your framework, or a new company?
No, Your Honor. But what I am saying is that the distinction that the legislature has drawn between high-speed rail and either railroads or interurbans is high-speed rail is the only one of those three entities that doesn't have eminent domain authority. So it's no coincidence here that TCRI and ITL are trying to fit round pegs in square holes because they want that eminent domain authority. That's the only thing that allows them to get on folks' property to survey, to condemn.
What stops a high-speed train from being an interurban train? Why isn't it?
Well, I have a couple thoughts, Your Honor. First, if interurbans could be high-speed rail, there never would have been a High-Speed Rail Act in 1989. True. But there's a reason why the legislature and the governor felt compelled to create an entire act. It wasn't because no one has thought of this before. It might be because no one's actually tried it before. This is a completely novel experience, just filing papers, saying you're a railroad and an interurban. One other word on interurbans. The last interurban was seen in the wild in the 40s. I think the last one that was created was maybe in the 20s. There's a reason why no one else has created these ever since then. They were meant to govern trolley cars. They are different animals. They are different species, high-speed rail to interurbans. Now, of course, they've counted on the fact that the definition of interurban talks about electric rail. That's about as close as you can shoehorn in a modern 200-mile-an-hour bullet train to the antiquated trolley cars of the 20s.
Just like that statute was repealed, they did not repeal the statute that was there, you know, where the trolley cars and all those other cars came under, you know. So why wouldn't they have repealed that if they did not want them or any other new company to come in and create these kinds of high-speed trains?
There's never been a public, at least from what I've looked at. I mean, granted, my frame of reference is a little bit more recent than the 40s or the 20s, but as from what I've seen, there's never been a public hue and cry about interurbans. Again, because no one's ever tried to make a bullet train qualify as an interurban and therefore have eminent domain authority. Again, keep in mind that high-speed rail is the one entity here that the legislature expressly said doesn't have eminent domain authority. So instead of going to the legislature to pass a law to say, high-speed rail is entitled to wield eminent domain authority if you do whatever you have to do, same as railroads and interurbans, they're seeking to do a judicial end run around the legislature to get a court to declare it. I want to take one other word about some fundamental distinctions between high-speed rail, railroads, and interurbans. That's why the STB, they had counsel for TCRI and ITL had said that they've had some great federal successes. We would take issue with that characterization. The STB has, in fact, denied TCRI's petitions for clarification, which was filed to speed up the process of acquiring private property, and their petition for exemption, which was sought to insulate the project from Texas regulation, because the type of track, again, this goes to the difference between interurbans and high-speed rail. The type of track that high-speed rail runs on is so fundamentally different from existing railroad, it cannot interconnect. They are two different species. The only interconnection that TCRI had championed to the STB was walking half a mile in Dallas or taking a 7-mile shuttle bus service in Houston. Because it couldn't interconnect with the existing interstate rail system is why the SCP denied both of their petitions, because it is, by definition, it has to be intrastate, not interstate. I want to say one other word. I believe Council for TCRI and ITL have championed some other federal wins. The DEIS that they talked about, if you read the DEIS, it's in our briefing, it says this is not a comment upon the merits. It's just a draft environmental statement. Something, it's checking a box in a bureaucracy of what they have to do. It doesn't give any authority to build anything.
But it's checking the box on something they have to do what?
It's a preliminary step for the Federal Railroad Administration to proceed further to consider whether or not this is anything that can actually happen. But that step has not occurred.
I'm going to shift gears real quick because I want to make sure I get an answer to this question.
Yes, sir.
Would you agree with the appellants with the proposition that, given your interpretation, there can never be a new railroad in Texas?
I would not, Your Honor.
So then, the question then becomes, when does a railroad become a railroad? Or is that even the question? Because you're completely eliminating TCR as a railroad or interurban.
First, to be a railroad, it's the legislature, it isn't us, that have chosen what the test is. And it's 8102, it says you have to be operating a railroad. That language could probably be a lot more specific. It could have given us more clues to what the test is, but it says operating a railroad.
We understand y'all's differences between operating a railroad.
Yes, sir.
Rolling stock and track, and they say we're operating because it's a concept and we're doing all the things that we need to do. But my question is, are you completely eliminating TCR because they're not a railroad and they're not an interurban? Or if you think they are, what does it take to become, and I ask the same questions of appellant, what's the lowest threshold for someone to become a new railroad in Texas?
The answer is in 8102, Your Honor, and it is perhaps unhelpful. It says operating a railroad. That's part of why this is such a hard discussion.
But it's like what came first, the chicken or the egg, right?
Yes.
You got to lay some track. You got to be a railroad first before you lay a track.
We do not agree that you have to have trains on track. But that certainly would be a lot closer to calling yourself a railroad. For the $125 million that they've stipulated that they've already spent, it would have been feasible to purchase a short line railroad either in Texas, elsewhere in the country, anywhere in the entire world, even purchase a high-speed rail. There's actually going to be an open question as we go into this. What type of train is required? You know, does it have to be of like kind because these are so different? But the point is, they could have at least bought some train cars. They could have bought an engine or two. They could have bought a depot station where they house things, where they worked out the mechanics and the logistics of how this is going to work. Instead, they spent all that money on lawyers and lobbyists and are trying to tell this court that that's a
rule. Statutory construction. How do you reconcile that? Because as is pointed out in the felon's brief, and as we all know, courts are to look at statutes and construe them. One of the things that's provided for in the government code is that when we're talking about the present, we're also talking about the future. And that's in government code 311. How do you respond to that argument? Because to me, it seems pretty compelling.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for the question. First, TCRI and ITL pay no heed to the Texas Supreme Court's caution that, quote, changing the meaning of a statute by adding words to it is a legislative function, not a judicial one. It is not for this court or any other to add words to a statute to make it more to any private party's liking. Second, the Texas Supreme Court also requires courts to presume that the legislature selected the language it enacted, as in 8102, quote, with care, including each word chosen, for a particular purpose, while purposefully omitting words that were not chosen. Therefore, this court is expressly prohibited from simply inserting will be into 8102 at the whim of TCRI and ITL.
How do you reconcile the Denbury case? Because that was where a company wanted to do this pipeline project, and the court did say that, you know, that they could exercise eminent domain and that, you know, in that authority, as long as it was established that a pipeline would be for public use. So how do you square that with your position?
First of all, I think the public use issue is misplaced here. We are not, this is not a common carrier case, as Denbury was. It's not a pipeline case. But what Denbury is a disquisition by Justice Willett on how to wield eminent domain under and what those limitations are and under what situations that it can be wielded, because it is such a, particularly for Texans, we are 98% private. That's more than any other state in the entire union. We have fought and bled for this private property. So it is a much bigger deal in Texas than it is anywhere else. That is what I guarantee you that the Texas Supreme Court is going to be reviewing if and when this ever gets prior before that court.
When?
That remains to be seen, Your Honor. But I agree that may be likely. So what Denbury does is it provides guidance as to what the Texas Supreme Court has said when you're going to wield eminent domain, whether it's for a common carrier, for a pipeline, for a railroad, for an interurban, for whatever. These are the rules of the road. It cabins the awesome power of eminent domain. Let me add one other point about how unworkable in practice TCRI and ITL's proffered construction of 8102 would actually be.
Before you go on to that,
yes, Your Honor.
Is your position, or do you agree that the proposed project would be for public use? Or you're not contesting that point?
We have not contested, but we would not agree with it. We simply don't think that it's an issue here, Your Honor. At least it hasn't been up to this point. Just a brief thought experiment. Under the will be prong, how could anyone ever establish as a matter of law sufficient for summary judgment that they will be operating a railroad at some undefined point in the future? Any testimony to this effect in any summary judgment affidavit is by its very nature conclusory, speculative, and not susceptible to being readily controverted, because I don't know what's going to happen any more than a court does or an affiant does. If that is their solution, that can never work in practice. That may be why the legislature chose not to include will be and instead just use operating. Let me, in my short remaining minutes, skip ahead to some low-hanging jurisprudential fruit where the court can affirm the judgment below as to both TCRI and ITL without even getting to the merits. First, the doubt as to TCRI's eminent domain powers. For over half a century, the Texas Supreme Court has made clear that if any doubt as to the scope of eminent domain power exists, the statute granting such power is strictly construed in favor of the landowner. That's not just in Denbury, that's in coastal states from 1958. It's not a new concept in law. Here, TCRI and ITL have each repeatedly judicially admitted that such doubt exists regarding TCRI's ability to wield eminent domain. First in their summary judgment that's directly at issue here, and again in their live pleadings, each have acknowledged that ITL was created only, quote, out of an abundance of caution after Mr. Miles alleged that TCRI did not have eminent domain powers, and, quote, to erase any question as to TCRI and ITL's authority to enter onto and survey Mr. Miles' property. In other words, TCRI and ITL thought the question whether TCRI could even wield eminent domain powers at all was so great, they freely admit to forming ITL in an attempt to cure that doubt. But under the statute and under construction, once doubt or question about the existence or scope of eminent domain power is acknowledged, the tie has to go to the landowner. It must be strictly construed in their favor. Briefly, also on ITL, this is our last issue in our brief. Their violation of Texas Rule Civil Procedure 166AA requires that before you file a summary judgment against someone, they have to have first appeared and answered. It's undisputed that the ITL sued Mr. Miles at 5:58 p.m. on a Friday evening and then moved for summary judgment the very next business day, the following Monday. Under 166AA, ITL simply wasn't empowered or permitted to file summary judgment until Mr. Miles had at least answered. And in fact, he wasn't even formally in the case yet. He hadn't even been served when the summary judgment was filed. This is not a situation that's addressed by the Mangum memorandum opinion from this court that's in ITL's reply brief, because it doesn't involve a failure to get your 21-day notice for a hearing or inadequate time to complete discovery in a no-evidence summary judgment. These are not no-evidence summary judgments here. Also, there's no due process concerns here that regard inadequate time to respond to an MSJ or prepare for an MSJ hearing. It's more
with regard to ITL and not to TCR.
Yes.
You're not alleging that with regard to that party.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. It's more fundamental than either one of those scenarios. In essence, 166AA confers subject matter jurisdiction on the trial court to adjudicate an MSJ only after the non-movement has appeared and answered in the suit. So therefore, it can be raised for the first time on appeal, as we've done here. And this actually makes sense. If the rule were otherwise, as ITL asserts, parties could and would will routinely file MSJs the day after suing someone, expecting them to object or waive, and that would obviate the need for and supplant the function of default judgments. That cannot be what the law is. In fact, it isn't. That's the harm that 166AA was enacted to prevent, and the mischief it was meant to curb. Unless anyone has any further questions, I'll yield back the balance of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, if I could pick up where counsel left off, they made absolutely no complaint in the trial court about the timing of the motion for summary judgment as to ITL. None. And the reason they didn't, it was the mirror image of the same motion for summary judgment for TCRI, which had been the case from the beginning. And it's not subject matter jurisdiction, as Your Honors know. It's a procedural rule on timing, and if they had a complaint about the timing, they needed to make it in the trial court. On the strict construction, what they really want here is you to strictly construe these statutory provisions that we put in our booklet in their favor. But there's nothing to strictly construe in their favor because the statutory provisions are plain and unambiguous on the issue in question. And what is the issue in question? Counsel tells you to look at subpart 2. Any legal entity operating a railroad, and he says, you gotta have trains on track. For this morning, for the first time, he said, well, maybe you don't have to have trains on track, maybe just buy a depot or, you know. But the word railroad there, where it says operating, statutory interpretation principles tell you to read that whole provision together. And when you read subpart 1 with subpart 2, you know that word railroad means a railroad business enterprise. Because in subpart 1, the word railroad means a railroad business enterprise. Because only an enterprise could incorporate. Trains on track cannot incorporate. So he's wrong about that, okay? Now, on high-speed rail, I'm not quite sure what counsel's even talking about. The only thing I can figure is he means the repeal of the High-Speed Rail Act. And the High-Speed Rail Act was a decision by the legislature that, you know, we want high-speed rail for Texas, so we're going to have a public-private partnership. The public entity will have condemnation authority. We're going to spend public money, and we're going to get this built. And then they repeal that. Who knows why? Maybe because they didn't want to spend public money to get it built. But as Judge Longoria pointed out, they did not repeal the provisions of the Transportation Code concerning railroad company and interurban electric railway company that allow us to build the high-speed train. What he's really saying about 100 miles versus 200 miles, this is his argument that interurban electric railway has to be limited to 1907 trolleys. And that is absolutely contrary to the Texas Supreme Court decision in the San Antonio Railway case we cite to Your Honors, where the Supreme Court said, legislature writes a condemnation statute to build telegraph lines. That includes later developed technology for telephone lines. We include later developed technology. So to say we just can't have a high-speed rail in Texas because he thinks we can only have electric trolleys as interurban electric railway, that's nonsensical. And it's contrary to Texas Supreme Court authority. And Justice Longoria hit the nail on the head when she said, this is a question of statutory interpretation. We aren't here to try to figure out what the legislature should have done. We're here to figure out what they did right. And as Justice Longoria pointed out, they didn't repeal these provisions in the Transportation Code when they repealed the High-Speed Rail Act. They didn't even cross-reference them. So they left in place the opportunity for a private entity to bring high-speed rail to Texas with all the benefits that that brings. So, and to Justice Tiarina's question, you asked him how much is enough, and this morning he seems to be saying you don't have to have trains on track now, you can just build a depot. I mean, the question is, when are you operating a railroad business enterprise? And we contend that on the undisputed facts of this case, we are operating a railroad business enterprise. And, Your Honor, you don't have to create a test for what is operating in this case because of the great amount of work that's already been done. I mean, he diminishes or acts like the STB thing What's going on with the STB? That's the Surface Transportation Board. It has jurisdiction over interstate railways. And when they declined jurisdiction, it was before we had made the contract with Amtrak to connect the high-speed rail to the interstate rail system. So now we've re-petitioned the STB to say, okay, now you can exercise jurisdiction. But the condemnation authority comes from these state statutes. That's what we're here to interpret this morning.
Counsel, I have a question, sort of. Are there other cases pending before other appellate courts regarding the same issue?
No, Your Honor, there are not. There are not. There was a case in Harris County that was dismissed. There are some abated cases in Ellis County, but there is nothing else in any other court of appeals. And so I hope we have addressed Your Honor's questions. I just would say that on the question of a test for operating, there's a reason why no court has ever said, oh, we're going to have a test for operating and let's see on these facts if it, because imagine what that does to condemnation and to building public infrastructure projects in Texas.
Well, and that's the question. If he had competing railway companies, because they're private companies,
right,
incorporating after 2007 with an idea, but they had two different routes that were parallel to one another because they're completely private and
right,
they have to create some issues.
But Your Honor, you pointed out, look at all the steps we have to take with the public entities to get this done. It's a private, but there's an awful lot of public involvement that has already gone on here. That's a 5,000-page draft environmental impact statement. They studied all the different routes and all the different factors, and they said this is the best route. And they rejected the no-build option. They said this is too important, a transportation need for Texas. So we ask Your Honor to rule and rule expeditiously so that we can go forward the survey and build the high-speed train for Texas between Houston and Dallas. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case for submission.